It's Wednesday, June 4th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com.
Hey, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash, everyone, on this Hemp Day Hump Day. Getting all ready and packed up here to head up to Aspen, Colorado for the Normal Legal Conference. It's going to be my first one. I'm really excited, and we'll have all sorts of recorded audio from the conference for you coming out as soon as I can get it up on the web. So stay tuned to the blog at stash.normal.org. I'll post all the updates up there. There's going to be plenty of people up there. Keith Strop and Alan St. Pierre, of course, will be there from Normal, and plenty of the attorneys from the Normal Legal Committee. So we should have a good time and get you lots of good information. Because of the travel time, there will be no Daily Audio Stash for Thursday, so be aware of that. And then for Friday, we'll just have to see. I don't know exactly what the schedule will be once I'm up there. For today's Daily Audio Stash, we got some great interviews for you today. Of course, we've got Dr. Mitch Earlywine ringing in with more debunking of the latest cannabis reefer madness sort of studies that are out there these days. And then we're joined by Ryan Ballou from Eastern Washington out there in the Spokane area. Wanted to give us a little heads up about the Spokane Hemp Fest that's happening on August 2nd and 3rd. And of course, Cannabis Carry has some great music coming up for us during the musical break, so stay tuned for that. Well, all right, everybody, strap on in and grab your favorite strain because it's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines.
Mendocino voters repeal lenient pot policy. Mendocino County relinquished its crown as the nation's epicenter of pot leniency Tuesday, with voters decisively approving a hotly contested measure to limit residents to 6 plants apiece under the state's medicinal pot law. With 85.5% of precincts reporting, Measure B had already locked up an unbeatable 55.5% of the vote. The measure, which repealed an initiative approved by county voters 8 years ago, allowing residents to grow as many as 25 pot plants for personal use, needed majority approval to pass. Other jurisdictions in the United States allow more plants, but they are generally confined to a specific space and must be used medicinally. Under the 8-year-old Mendocino regulations, the 25 allowable plants can grow as large and thick as possible and be used as the owner wishes. When the county's regulations passed as Measure G in 2000, proponents said the rules would simply codify what had been happening for decades in the county, massive pot growth that made Mendocino part of Northern California's renowned Emerald Triangle. The generous standards made it easier for people to grow pot to be used as pain relief medicine, advocates say, but many residents and law enforcement officials complain that the standards were abused by people growing hundreds of plants at home for commercial sale. Well, there's only one problem with the passage of Measure B. It restores the limit of plants for medical users as determined by Senate Bill 420, which is 6 plants and 8 ounces. However, that language has just been ruled unconstitutional by a California appeals court. According to attorney Omar Figueroa, there currently is no official limit for California medical marijuana patients. Each patient's reasonable amount of medical marijuana would have to be determined on a case-by-case basis. Given this development, Measure B is moot regarding medical users. Measure G had also allowed 25 plants for personal or recreational use. That is now repealed, but it was never legally in force anyway, since both California and United States law banned the growing of cannabis for personal use. New Jersey High School in lockdown over marijuana customer threats. From the Associated Press, Newark, New Jersey. Threats against a Ramsey High School student from an angry marijuana customer forced the school to lock its students inside for much of the day. Police say a 45-year-old unemployed married father is under arrest after leaving messages on a student's cell phone Tuesday saying he'd come to the school with a gun and a baseball bat to collect the $30 he gave him to buy pot. Hey, you know what you never hear about? Teenage high school students selling cigarettes and beer to 45-year-old men. In a world without cannabis prohibition, that man could go to an adults-only store like a liquor store, purchase a pack of cannabis, for less than $30, surely, and go home. Now, we may not agree with his priorities. An unemployed father probably has more pressing needs than getting high, but we don't know his situation. He could be a medical user. He could be under an enormous amount of stress. Regardless, he'd spend less and face less pressure from the fear of arrest and would have no teenager to berate on the cell phone about a messed up $30 dope deal if he could buy cannabis in a regulated market. Also, the teenage high school student wouldn't have the market to deal pot to adults anymore, especially socially disturbed middle-aged men who want to play Tony Soprano in some childish cell phone drama. $30? Really, dude? Traceable electronic death threats? Over $30? Like I say, marijuana smoking does not make you stupid, but there are plenty of stupid people who smoke marijuana. Less sex, drugs, and booze for high school kids. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention questioned 14,041 students in grades 9 through 12 in 39 states in spring of 2007 on a range of risky behaviors in a survey it has conducted every 2 years since 1991. The survey said 20% of the high school students had used marijuana at least once in the prior month, up from the 15% in 1991, but down from a peak of 27% in 1999. In addition, 38% said they had ever used marijuana, more than in 1991, but down from 47% in 1999. Well, isn't that strange? In 1999, when there were 4 medical marijuana states, 27% of high schoolers used marijuana in the past month and 47% they used it at least once. Now, in 2007, when the number of medical marijuana states has tripled, both figures dropped substantially. Wasn't medical marijuana supposed to send the wrong message to the children? Oklahoma State Representative says he's concerned about his opponent's normal affiliation. From Neighbor Newspapers in Tulsa, Oklahoma. State Representative Lucky Lamons, a retired Tulsa police officer, has drawn his first opponent in a race in over 4 years, a Tulsa lawyer who is a member of a national group working to legalize marijuana. Jay Ramey, age 43, who filed on Tuesday, is a member of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, commonly known as NORML. On his office website, Ramey writes, quote, "I do not believe that anyone should go to jail or be punished in any way for marijuana. Therefore, I completely support the goals of NORML," end quote. Lehman said he was, quote, "concerned about Ramey's affiliation with illegal narcotics," end quote. Ramey said he was running because he wanted to give voters a Republican choice in this election. He did not want the normal issue to gain greater attention than the other issues in District 66, he said. I'm concerned about a lot more than that, he added. He stressed that the law office site was for his private practice and not his campaign platform. Ramey said his involvement with Normal would not be the number one issue of the campaign. Lehman said, quote, I am concerned about his involvement with Normal and his website advocating to decriminalize narcotics. There's a reason we have them under the criminal code. I hope that is not his platform. From 22 years in law enforcement, I can try to make a consensus with a lot of people, but I do not see eye to eye with him on that issue. I've seen what the devastation of drugs can do, have done, and continue to support legislation to increase penalties, end quote. Isn't it remarkable how fast a prohibitionist can go from marijuana to narcotics to devastation of drugs? Never let them get that far. Remind them politely that marijuana is not a narcotic. Narcotics are addictive. You have to sort of feel a little sorry for Layman's, though. It would be tough to see the issue clearly when you spend 22 years in law enforcement dealing with the tiny minority of problematic drug users. He's obviously projected the worst-case hardcore addicts onto the vast majority of adults who use cannabis responsibly. He just can't conceive of someone who gets up, goes to work, works hard, comes home, cleans house, reads to his kids, puts them to bed, and then maybe enjoys smoking a joint with his wife on the porch before heading to bed. Good luck to Normal Legal Committee member Jay Ramey in his race for the Oklahoma State Representative. This is how we begin to tear down the wall of ignorance, by openly proclaiming that there is nothing wrong with responsible adult use of marijuana, and then daring people to move on to more important issues.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death.
Tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hate to make him wait, but you just gotta have another cigarette.
All right, we're here for Cannabis and Health Day, and we're joined again by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Associate Professor of Psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. Dr. Earlywine, welcome back to the Daily Audio Stash.
Oh, it's great to be on again.
Hey, you had emailed me something last week, and I thought this was definitely something we should cover as far as talking about this theory of cannabis addiction. And again, it also kind of dovetails in with the whole potency issue. And this is this study that you just sent me about cannabis dependency along with tobacco use. So I guess a lot of people do smoke both substances, and apparently there's a problem with that.
Well, this is an interesting data set from Bruce Johnson's crew down in New York City. And basically, they're looking at folks who use blunts or who chase marijuana with tobacco. So they smoke a blunt and then they smoke a cigar or something like that. And this combination of tobacco and cannabis seems to be more likely to produce dependent symptoms than just using cannabis alone. And I actually just reviewed a confidential paper that I can't discuss in great detail, but basically sort of confirming these sorts of findings. And what this says to me is, in fact, something a little suspicious about what cannabis dependence really means. So often you'll see these cannabis withdrawal scales, and there are things like, oh, I'm irritable, I'm quick to anger, that kind of thing like that. And I can't help but wonder, is some of that a little bit confounded with tobacco use or nicotine withdrawal rather than what people have been presenting as cannabis withdrawal.
Well, that's quite interesting, you know, and I actually kind of underwent my own little experiment with this, having been in Helena, Montana last week, and of course had to fly, so I'm of course very responsible and don't travel with any cannabis or anything like that, and had to go 3 days, and, you know, the only thing that I could really detect was having trouble sleeping, and I think that may have had more to do with the hotel room and the noisy people next to me. It's interesting, this tobacco study, though, that it says that I was looking at the abstract here, and I like where they say here, let's see, conventional wisdom says that this is because marijuana is stronger today than in the past, but this explanation is inadequate on several levels. Recent reports that marijuana has increased in potency by factors of 10 to 20 are unsupported. So it's nice to see they shot down that potency argument. And I guess what they're trying to say here is that what has been ascribed to this so-called killer skunk marijuana potency really could have a whole lot more to do with the tobacco in the blunts.
I really like that explanation, and in fact, this lends itself to easy animal research or human psychopharm research where people would come into the lab and use both substances at the same time, and I'm hoping that these kinds of studies are getting funded, because if you take a close look at this, what has been the big change, there really hasn't been a very dramatic increase in potency despite what some of the media have led us to believe, but this blunt chasing and blunt use is definitely markedly more common than it was even 10 years ago, and if that nicotine is contributing to the perception of cannabis dependence and addictive qualities, well, then we really need to understand that and take that kind of work into account. I do want to reference my student, Sarah Smucker-Barnwell, who had done something comparable looking at folks who use alcohol and cannabis together and how heavy drinkers were also more likely to report cannabis-dependent symptoms. And I feel like that may also be the sort of confusion of what am I withdrawing from, or what is the source of this negative emotional experience, and is it really cannabis or is it something else? And in poly drug users, I'm afraid we can't really know. And I hate to think that cannabis has to bear the brunt and get the finger pointed at it as the dependence producing substance, when in fact there are other substances that are being used simultaneously.
Well, you know, I'd imagine there's a lot of other factors that make this hard to study. You know, you're mentioning, you know, hard to find a population that only is using cannabis, not in use with alcohol or tobacco or any other illicit drugs. And I would also think that people, if they were going to admit to an illicit drug, they would admit to marijuana much more readily than they would admit to methamphetamine or cocaine or any other illicit drugs.
And that social desirability is something that's very hard to measure. So, I mean, you can imagine trying to construct a questionnaire that basically asks, hey, are you going to lie to me?
Yeah.
So you can see how any attempt to sort of co-vary some of this stuff out can get very difficult. In the old days when Fulton and folks like Cohen had people come into the lab and actually live at the hospital for you know, weeks on end sometimes, that was the real opportunity to see how you know, cannabis contributed to dependence, and we had very little evidence in a 93-day study done by Cohen, oh gosh, back in the 70s. And Fulton's work more recently suggests that, you know, THC administered across time, we do see some moderate tolerance, but we don't see any of this stereotypical withdrawal and dependence that seems to get hyped up when people are wagging their fingers at cannabis users and saying it's addictive.
I was wondering one thing, too. This study, of course, is focusing on how the tobacco may be leading to the increase of these cannabis-dependent symptoms. Does it work the other way around? Do they look at how does cannabis increase or decrease, perhaps, someone's ability to stop using cigarettes? Has that been looked at in the literature?
It's funny because the anecdotes about, oh, I used cannabis to get off of tobacco are really, really common. I'm sure you've been at many a conference where you've heard people tell that story. Unfortunately, this is not a high priority for NIDA to discover that smoking marijuana can help decrease tobacco use, so that research hasn't been done formally. I also have seen data, however, suggesting that marijuana turns into this odd gateway into tobacco dependence, so that folks who are using cannabis early in life who also use cigarettes are more likely to become dependent on cigarettes, but I don't think that makes a ton of sense pharmacologically so much as just people who use drugs early in life are often the ones who do end up dependent on cigarettes, perhaps for, you know, dispositional reasons, because they're sensation seekers or because they're just that sort of person, not necessarily some chemical response to THC.
Now, how does the data in this study look with respect to ethnicity? Is there more of this tobacco and cannabis use among Latinos or African Americans, or is it pretty widespread across the spectrum?
Well, I'm a big fan of this research group, and because they're working in the city, they can get a nice ethnic breakdown on this. And so I do feel like this isn't just a bunch of whites. Basically, you know, we're in the South Bronx. We've got lower-income Manhattan folks as well. And so we do see a higher percentage of African-Americans and Latinos in this sample than in a lot of other studies of marijuana use. It's too early to say, oh, this is more common among, say, African-Americans. And I feel like there's a tendency to point to the ethnic difference data and really go with the notion of abuse and how being arrested or having legal problems mm-hmm. related to cannabis leads to a diagnosis of abuse. And we discussed before how if you're basically, you know, darker than me and you, then what a surprise, you're at higher risk for being arrested for possession. And that tends to be a symptom of abuse. Here in these data, they're focusing only on dependence, on not on that particular symptom. And I'm eager to see if there are ethnic differences in using blunts or in using tobacco and cannabis simultaneously. Would that somehow account for some of these ethnic differences that have been reported in rates of cannabis-related problems?
Well, yes, it's really hard when you look at all of the factors involved that to separate out what is the cannabis causing versus what is the cannabis prohibition causing. I always think of that that poster that Normal puts out, you know, a pot smoker is arrested every 38 seconds, and you wonder why we're paranoid. So that just gives me that idea there.
Well, I want to emphasize this in conjunction with the vaporizer study I published last year that really suggests that there is a synergy between cannabis and tobacco as far as respiratory symptoms are concerned. So that if folks are using cannabis and tobacco simultaneously, they might want to consider moving from blunts to joints and moving from joints to the vaporizer just to keep those respiratory symptoms down. We've seen from Tashkin's data it's probably not going to turn into lung cancer if you're smoking only cannabis. But this combination of tobacco and cannabis is markedly more problematic. And, I mean, I hate to sound like anybody's mom, but it's really not good to be smoking tobacco. So if you can quit, by all means do.
Well, absolutely. And if cannabis gets you there, then that sounds like at least a healthier alternative than smoking the tobacco and the cannabis. Dr. Earlywine, thanks for joining us here again on our Daily Audio Stash.
Always a pleasure.
Just say no.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech?
Drug school.
You don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life.
Hey, this is great, man.
Even if you never smoked marijuana.
I never used marijuana. Sorry.
Don't think you smoked marijuana.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two and didn't inhale.
Or you used to smoke marijuana.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Pot Culture by former High Times editor Steve Bloom and Shirley Halperin will answer every question you ever had about marijuana culture.
Has that marijuana made it back up here yet?
Check out Pot Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life at Amazon.com or visit potculturebook.com today.
Too bad, man. I just stopped smoking yesterday.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. The Wednesday Stash gets global as we head to Ireland for today's cannabis-inspired tune. The band, Stoat, brings traditional Irish music to the table, reminiscent of a good time pub sing-along, but toasts our favorite relaxant instead. This three-piece band of Dubliners are destined for worldwide fans with this new classic, I Wish I Was Stoned. Visit their webpage at stoatmusic.com. That's S-T-O-A-T music.com to listen to their music. And then add Stoat to your favorite Irish bands alongside Van Morrison, U2, and Thin Lizzy. For more information on this artist, check out our website at stash.normal.org. We've got links for information on the album as well as an MP3 download of this song. It's Stoat and I Wish I Was Stoned. Associate Director of Oregon Normal, a chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. I'm proud to announce the release from Oregon Normal of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act Handbook. This is the definitive guide for the patient, caregiver, or grower in Oregon trying to learn the ins and outs of our medical marijuana program. The guide answers common questions from, how do I register with the state to use cannabis medicinally? And what are the possession limits regarding plants and medicine? To questions like, what do I tell my landlord or the police about my medical marijuana? And what if my doctor won't help me with a marijuana recommendation? The handbook also contains a complete copy of the Oregon Revised Statutes governing medical marijuana. For your own copy, check out our website at ornorml.org. We're getting ready for the summer festival season, and of course, one of the best places to be around in the summer festival season is the Pacific Northwest, and I'm going a little bit east to eastern Washington here, Spokane, Washington. We're going to speak now with Ryan Ballew, who's the director and founder of the Spokane Hemp Fest. Ryan, welcome to the Stash.
Thank you.
Hey, so Spokane Hemp Fest, tell us all about the history and of the Spokane Hemp Fest and what you're looking forward to this year.
Well, we started out in 2005 being our first year. We worked on it all of 2004 to make it happen. We brought in three stages, and we do it in Riverfront Park. It's been going pretty well. Now here we are about 4 years later, and we're moving the event to Highbridge Park in Spokane, Washington. It's a two-day event. We're working with four stages, about 100 vendors. We bring in between 5,000 and 10,000 people. It's a pretty good event.
Well, that sounds great. So what are the dates now for the Spokane Hemp Fest?
The dates this year are August 2nd and 3rd.
August 2nd and 3rd. And you say 5,000 to 10,000 people to show up, huh?
Yep.
Oh, wow, that's great. Now, you got four stages. Tell us about some of the bands that you're going to have playing for us.
We bring in all local bands. We do work with some out-of-state bands, but as a volunteer event and we're sponsor-driven, we're not able to pay any bands. So any of the bands that do come to us, they all come on volunteer basis. We've worked with, say, Los Marihuanos. I know they're pretty popular.
Mm-hmm.
Those are one of the bands that we would like to pay to be here.
Right on.
Right now, locally, we work with a band called Kite. We work with a guy called Knothead. He comes to Portland a lot. We work with bands like High Ceiling. They're a local favorite in Washington. There's hundreds of bands that we've worked with over the years.
Well,
I could go on for days about that.
Oh, yeah. It's great having these festivals because, you know, I had a lot of experience in a previous lifetime as a professional and semi-professional musician. And this is a great chance for new and upcoming bands to get out there and get heard by the public. So, yeah, even if, you know, if hemp isn't your thing, you can always show up to these things and just get some great music to hear.
Oh, most definitely. We get bands from as far away as Chicago, Louisiana, Florida. I never know who's going to come every year, but every year I'm surprised to see more and more people from further away.
Okay, and just talking about the Hemp Fest that you're having, how's the media react to your Hemp Fest? Do you get any coverage in the local papers or the TV or anything like that?
We usually get coverage on the news for Hemp Fest both days. The media treats us pretty well. I deal with the city council, and I go to the city council meetings, which are publicized on TV for free for everybody. The city council treats us really well. The city council here has actually went to bat for us a couple of times, working with the park that we worked with for the first few years. So it's been really cool to have their support. And all the newspapers here, they all welcome us, and of course our advertising.
Now you say the city council had to go to bat for you. Was there some conflict, somebody trying to shut you down?
Not being shut down, but dealing with the park that we were using the first couple of years here, there's all kinds of different regulations and rules. Say we couldn't even sell water to our people that came that were thirsty. So we had to get the city council to do different things to help us get past those kind of hurdles.
Well, that's great. They work things out with you. Now, of course, Spokane, Washington, you're over in the eastern side of Washington, so you're close to the border of Idaho, I imagine. Right? That's University of Idaho area, that area out there? Or?
It is. It's about an hour away from here.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you probably get a whole lot of college-age kids, perhaps, coming out. I don't know if they get to college that early in August, but...
We do, and we have a lot of colleges here. Eastern Washington University, where I go to school at, Whitman College, Gonzaga, which is oftentimes in the top four of the basketball season. We do have a lot of college people that attend here.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So Spokane Hemp Fest, August 2nd and 3rd, Spokane, Washington. And what was the name of the park again? Because you're moving to a new park.
We are moving to a new park. It is a beautiful park. It is Highbridge Park.
Highbridge Park, Spokane, Washington. We'll have links up to that. Is there a website that people can get some information?
There is right now. You can go to my MySpace page, which is definitely a favorite these days. You can find me as the Hemp Fest Guy on MySpace.
So myspace.com/thehempfestguy?
No, not the, just Hempfest Guy.
Okay, myspace.com/hempfestguy. We'll have a link to that up on our blog at stash.normal.org. And Ryan, good luck with your festival this year. Anything else you want to tell our listeners?
We would just like to say thanks to everyone that supported every year. Thanks to our Portland family that came out every year. And we'd like to also give our love to Portland Hempfest.
All right on. Thanks, Ryan. And we'll be seeing you this summer. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from Allen Ginsberg, the noted activist. Quote, "Marijuana is a useful catalyst for specific optical and aural aesthetic perceptions. I apprehended the structure of certain pieces of jazz and classical music in a new manner under the influence of marijuana, and these apprehensions have remained valid in years of normal consciousness." End quote. Or to put it shorter, marijuana opens up your mind, man. I'm Radical Russ. We'll be reporting to you from the Normal Legal Conference in Aspen, Colorado this weekend, so stay tuned for those. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.